England would remain, throughout this period, the central player in all of the coalitions aimed at breaking Napoleonic power. England was not in a position to reverse the situation on the continent. England needed some sort of major land power as an ally on the continent. But nonetheless, England would certainly use its naval power. It would use its military power on the continent in Spain, at the periphery of the Napoleonic Empire, to encourage Spanish rebellion against Napoleon. The English also refused to join the so-called continental system, Napoleon's effort to bring England to its knees by a kind of reverse blockade. None of this really was very effective. England, however, was not an immediate threat to French predominance in Europe. It could hold out. It could cause trouble for Napoleon, and it certainly did. At any opportunity, it would provide funding, it would provide trade, it would do anything it could to encourage diplomatically the Habsburgs, the Romanovs, the Hohenzollerns, anyone, to resist Napoleon. But in terms of its ability to actually reverse power arrangements on the continent, it simply could not. It could not do it. England would be involved in the so-called Peninsular Campaign from 1805 to 1813, a long, drawn-out, slogging match with the French in Spain and in Portugal, where the Duke of Wellington would cause considerable trouble for the Napoleonic armies. But this was an irritant. This was a problem. It was not a real threat to the Napoleonic Grand Empire. By 1810, all the ruling families of continental Europe had been defeated, and Napoleon had established himself and his family among the crowned heads of Europe. In 1805, Napoleon named himself King of Italy, an act that mortified all royalty in Europe. In 1807, his brother Jerome was named King of Westphalia, a state that Napoleon had created out of territory in western Germany. Other brothers were placed on the thrones of Holland and Naples, and other family members were made royalty in the smaller German principalities. This was one good opportunity that the German states provided, was to offer territories that one could become king or prince of. And this was simply too much for the traditional crowned heads of Europe. Europe now consisted, in this period from 1802 to 1810, certainly by 1810, Europe consisted of the Grand Empire, Napoleon's Grand Empire, and its new frontiers, and a series of vassal states, the various German states, for example, in the West in particular, were reorganized into something called the Confederation of the Rhine. In 1806, the old Holy Roman Empire that had been around for 900 years simply dissolved under Napoleonic pressure. And in its wake, the Confederation of the Rhine was created for the Western German states. Italy also found itself in this position as a vassal state of the empire. Holland annexed outright in 1810. Other states were forced into military or economic alliance with France. Austria, after 1809, Austria, the Habsburg policy over the centuries had been first to resist by military force a potential an enemy, and if that didn't work, then one married. So that in 1809, the Habsburgs, having failed repeatedly to bring Napoleon to his knees in a military sense, brought him down at least figuratively on one knee in a proposal to Maria Luisa, Habsburg princess, whom he married in 1810, having divorced his wife Josephine in 1809. This marriage, the marriage of a Habsburg princess to Napoleon, really seemed to be the coup de grace to the old order in Europe. It's one thing to transfer territories. It's one thing for old principalities to be absorbed. It's one thing for great powers to be defeated in battle. But when this oldest, most respected noble family in Europe, the Habsburgs that had dominated not only all of Europe, but much of the New World in the 16th and early 17th centuries, marries this Corsican bounder, this illegitimate nobody, this jumped-up military dictator, this for the old powers of Europe, for the social order in Europe, as well as the diplomatic, was